We're back with the Geek Whispers. I'm Matt Brender.
I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And if you're as sick of crappy content as we are, you're in the right place tonight. We're happy to be joined by our guest, Stephen Foskett. Now, I know you, Stephen. I know you won't toot your own horn, so I'll let John do it for you.
So Stephen is a longtime analyst, writer, technologist. And
don't call me an analyst. Just call me some dude. You know.
Some dude. He knows about he's knows about technology. Can you tell us a little bit about Tech Field Day? Because that's one of the things you're known for, and one of the things I think that you've done that is most kind of seminally kind of moved how people think about community and technologists and you know, all the stuff that this podcast is about in the tech IT space.
Right. So so John, you know, you were there right at the very beginning, and that's totally cool. It was you know, you've seen this thing develop the whole time. You know, yeah. I'm a you know, storage nerd, and a lot of us in nerds like me who used to write for magazines, I wrote for Storage Magazine, amazingly enough, for 10 years. And then it all collapsed around me, just like it all collapsed around everybody. And the internet just tromped all over us. It's Shiva doing a dance of destruction across the world and ruined everything. And so we all started looking around and saying, well, great, where are we going to get our information now? Where are we going to write now? Where are we going to speak? What are we going to do? Because some of us are just kind of driven to, I don't know, just have this weird compulsion to, like, you know, learn about things and then write about them. So what we did as a group was we started kind of looking around for different outlets. I mean, one of the first things, you know, that I did, well, I had started my own blog. I also started kind of a group blog called Gestalt IT. Bonus points if you can figure out what that is supposed to mean. And then eventually we kind of hit on this idea of having some kind of event. And so people like, you know, Greg Nierman and Sunshine Mugerby and others and, you, John, we all were kind of thrashing around trying to figure out what to do. And then, you know, it kind of hit me that what we really needed to do is we needed to create a new kind of event that was really on equal footing, where it wasn't, you know, the company in charge who's going to, you know, bring in people that they like and talk at them all day, that it was going to be something much more neutral, much more social. And so that's where this Tech Field Day idea came from. The idea that I thought of was, well, you know, what if we just have a field day? What if we have a day where everybody just sort of gets together and leaves everything else behind and goes out and checks stuff out and kicks the tires? You know, a field day is actually an agricultural fair where farmers get together and inspect tractors and things like that.
That is awesome. I had no idea that was the reference.
You know, I've never said that before. It's true, though. It's also a day where amateur radio enthusiasts leave behind power and try to show that they can work in emergency conditions. So there's the battery angle and the electronics, I guess. And it's, of course, it's a day when everybody gets off school. So, there's that too, to play games.
Brilliant.
And so we decided to have a field day. And so I contacted a bunch of companies that I knew and I said, hey, I'm going to get a bunch of people together. Will you pay us to, you know, offset the cost of flying all these people in and putting them in hotels and stuff? Will you pay us? And then we'll give you some, you know, some time with everybody. And that's really how it happened. And it was really fantastic. The first one was just amazing fun. You know, and John was one of the people that introduced it. You know, he was featured in the videos and so on. And I knew I was onto something when, during the first presentation, literally the first presentation of the first field day, I got a phone call from EMC saying, okay, we want to be in for number two.
Hmm.
And of course there wasn't a number two, but of course, being a halfway smart guy, I said, yeah. And that was it. So there you go.
I love it. But that's not alone what we wanted to bring you on today to talk about, Stephen. You hit on a fascinating point in a recent blog post where called "Everybody's on the Internet and Nobody Cares."
Well, it was actually a quote from a blog post that I was referencing, and I just really hit on it. So essentially, here's what happened. So there's this music industry dude who was talking to some podcast guy and bemoaning the fact that social media marketing is dead. And Marco Arment, Marco Arment, I don't know, he does a lot of stuff. He did Instapaper. That's how I know him.
The first employee of Tumblr.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, this is Tumblr. Yeah, who's heard of Tumblr? Come on. Instapaper. So he's also one of those people who's just, you know, he's a great, great blogger and writes a lot of stuff. And so he referenced it in basically taking this whole idea that everything that marketing changed from the days of payola and music journalists to the days of, I got a music blog, check it out, this album's awesome, to today when everybody's constantly shouting at each other and nobody's hearing anything. Marco compared that to the App Store, the Apple App Store, and the fact that there's, you know, 750,000 apps. So what do? Right. If you come up with a new app, there's 500 others, you know, that do the same thing. And I kind of looked at that and I said, you know, I see a real parallel here with the IT stuff that I know about, you know, in terms of marketing and community, you know, involvement and publicity and all this. I could totally see a connection there. And so I hit on this line because I thought that this was kind of the poignant moment where I started to disagree with this guy. So, I mean, he led us through this whole transition from, you know, sort of, you know, pro PR to the wild internet to the crazy internet where nobody's listening, where everybody's on the internet and nobody cares. And I saw a hole there.
Well, Stephen, let me jump in for a sec. I see the problem. I mean, if I look around our company, you know, a few years ago where a few was, I don't know, 5, 7, there was, you know, a few that we had a couple of blogs and there were like 7 videos on our YouTube channel and Twitter hadn't been invented yet. And, you know, everybody was just making microsite. I mean, to get leads, we would commission a Gartner white paper and they'd use it for 2 years. You know, now we've got dozens of videos that go up every week on our YouTube channel. I got 50 blogs pumping out, you know, dozens of pages every week. I've got hundreds of bloggers that just blog about VMware and virtualization. And then I got marketing managers just all they know how to do. I mean, the reaction is, well, let's just turn the crank faster. Let's make more content. Mm-hmm. And something about this is unsustainable.
So you think so?
A couple things here. It's interesting as I'm going through this and sort of listening and thinking and absorbing Stephen's blog, which is, I think, a must read. This is really interesting stuff. What we lost, what we used to have was kind of bumpers on the content we absorbed. And it was clear. It was concise. And that was easy for marketers. I came from a book publishing background, and your goal was to get, you know, to be on the New York Times bestseller list, because then you're kind of done then. And when bloggers came up in that industry, it was very difficult because every blogger
very disruptive.
Very disruptive. And the bloggers each had a small patch of land, but nobody was as big as the New York Times. So we had distributed marketing. And we're in an age of distributed marketing now. And the only way people can manage it, again, harkens back to my web development past of you've got to have information architecture. You have to put things in buckets. And I think the way we put things in buckets is to knight new word of mouth marketing leaders. So I really do like the term citizen analyst, depending on who they are. And it works, I think, in our industry. The more they consume, the more content they consume, and then choose what they spit back out and how they amalgamate it, makes them valuable to us, because then as consumers, we don't have to consume all the raw data. We can consume some of the analyzed data. And Stephen, even in your blog, it's a great example. The meta example is your blog, because you've consumed a lot of these different ideas and you're packaging it for us. And I think that's a powerful thing, but it's extremely disruptive, again, in marketing, because then it's not that you went out to do this, but you've empowered yourself. And a traditional marketing team might say, oh my gosh, what do we do now?
that's exactly it. That the meta thing here is that I only heard about this guy's views because it was filtered by the podcast guy, and then it was filtered by Marco Arment, and now I filtered it, and now you guys heard it. You know, well, you might have heard from Marco, but the point is that, you know, essentially filters don't only exist, they're fantastically useful and important, and growing more important. Essentially, the noise, the gaming of the system and all these links and everything makes it even more important to build up a consistent and credible self so that people will know that, you know, if Steven posts something, it's probably about storage.
I think it's going to be easier for me to say it on the outside that when you do post something, I know you're going to come from a thoughtful angle that isn't purchasable. Quite frankly, you have a reputation as someone that will put your integrity before anything else, and that comes out in the way you write. And that's something of interest to our audience, right? Because there's so much content out there to get people's attention, but the credibility of all of it isn't equal. Do you think that's a game changer, guys?
I'm going to jump in and say that people are the new Google search. So when we talk about, again, talking about the meta layer and going back to the analogy coming from book publishing, when Amazon came about and we had that layer of book reviews that independent people could promote, that became the system to game. And then people had to figure out, you know, were they a certified purchaser? Had they actually read the book? Are they a relative of the author, et cetera? Could they have possibly read the book in the time allotted between publishing and the time their review went up, et cetera? So it became this new, who do we trust? This was taken away from journalists in a way. And I think the power has been gone from just sort of pure marketing, from companies talking about themselves. I mean, we've learned to scrutinize that. And it was handed over to this middle layer, this meta layer, this space between IRAR, PR, and the customer. And I think it's incredibly powerful. And particularly in our industry, where the sales cycle is long and the price of a misstep is quite high in some ways. So you and the political capital expended to change courses, I think, is incredibly high. So you really want to have research and backing and very thoughtful engagement with people who have deployed certain technologies before you would take a step in that direction. So it's all the more powerful.
What about the IT buyer? That's the person that all these companies are trying to talk to. I can see how people are filters. I can see how their filter might be their local VMUG. If they're on Twitter, it is the gang on Twitter. It might be Planet V12N and the virtualization bloggers, or it might be, if they're a big enough company, it might be Gartner. They buy analyst reports. Mm-hmm. So those are all filters. I don't know. I'm kind of curious, Stephen, in the context of Tech Field Day, how do the marketers you're setting up, do they look at this as a channel or a filter, or how do the marketers that you work with think about what you're trying to do when you introduce them to these influencers or citizen analysts, a term that of Amy's that we might revisit here?
Yeah. Well, that's a really important thing and a really interesting question. And, you know, it's funny. The more I think about it, the more I'm kind of seeing it as, you know, different people have different, they're looking for different things from Tech Field Day, on the client side, on the company side. You know, the slam dunk thing that they want is essentially metrics. They want to be able to go back to, you know, the PR people. I work with a lot of PR people. I'm PR people's best friend because essentially I give them the metrics that their clients are paying them for. You know, the client says, look, I want a bunch of mentions. Can you get me some mentions? Can you get me some tweets? Yeah, that's the metric. That's the easy metric. That's the mechanical platform metric. And I can give them a report that says there was 2,000 tweets and there was, 50 blog posts and there was, 25,000 video views or something. And they can look at that and say, okay, client, you wanted some metrics. Here's some metrics. This is what you paid for. So that's kind of the surface layer. But I always try to tell people, and I always try to convince them, and not all of them want to go further than the surface layer, because frankly, you know, if that's what you're paid for, if that's what your MBO says, you know, I need this many tweets, well, that's what you're going to focus on. But I always try to encourage them to go further than that. And I say that, you know, the ultimate sign to me of success is when, when a company really builds a relationship with an independent, you know, blogger who is out there writing, or a seminar speaker or somebody like that. Essentially, when, I recently had, I noticed an article by one guy who hasn't been to Tech Field Day in 4 years, and he wrote about one of the companies from Tech Field Day too. And that to me is the key. That's somebody who essentially, you know, the company didn't just make them write a blog post that week, you know, the week that they heard about it and, you know, oh, this is interesting, I'll write something about it. They had kept in contact with this company for 4 years, keeping up to date on their products, trying the products out, and they still were writing about it, and they still were speaking about it. And I bet that if they run into those people at VMworld, for example, they're not just going to say, oh, there's an interesting company. They're going to say, is that, hey, Bob, I remember you. And that's, to me, the ideal goal.
I had two different moments there. First off, I was distracted by the depression that was ensuing when you told me that a lot of your audience really just wants you to stop at the vanity metrics and say, we had these many peanuts fall into these buckets, and now I can get my money from you, Mr. or Mrs. PR agent, for the company.
The people are results driven.
That's not a result. That's a tally mark. The results are.
They know it too. They know it too. They know that it's pathetic and terrible and awful. But you know what? If I'm going to pay you $20,000 to get me X number of tweets, and I can do it, then sign
then you're
me
doing
up.
It. Yeah. So that was step one. What I really appreciated where we landed though is, and I think it's reminiscent in one of the quotes in your article that you say we're both the audience as well as the speaker.
My takeaway was this content crisis can be ameliorated with relationships. I think that's one thing Steven's doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a separate thing, which is does the marketer have to become part of the group they're marketing to, which some people would agree with and some people would disagree with. I'm certainly of the go native variety, but I don't necessarily think that everybody has to do that.
Well, I don't have all the answers. I don't know how to do it really at all, but I know that what I'm doing seems to work in this one case. And, you know, for me, as you know, Matthew just said, the differentiator very simply is that I'm not only a member, I'm not only the president, I'm also the member, whatever. I'm the Hair Club for Men. That's, by the way, I've got another blog post in the works, the Hair Club for Men marketing approach. And I'm not going to say that this is the ultimate do-all, end-all marketing approach. I'm just going to say, for me, that's the thing that differentiates me, is that I actually just love storage.
Well, and that authenticity can't be bought. I mean, if we're going to use... since I have an idiom for all occasions, it can. And there are other ways to be authentic, I think. But one of the fastest, most realistic ways is to be present. I mean, again, referencing another blog post, sorry to be so self-referential, but that concept of the influence diet of, you know, get up, dress up, show up. That's how people are going to start to know who you are and believe what you have to say. And I don't think you could... Yeah, the Hair Club for Men is a perfect example. We all know that, and it resonates for a reason. You believe it because the bald guy has hair now.
Well, I've told this story a couple times, but I'll just briefly. I mean, I was working with a program, and I kept telling them they needed a subject matter expert. They were marketing people, and they were programming, like, okay, we're going to do our blog and our Facebook, and yeah, go. We have our bosses say go. And I kept telling them, just hire an SE, hire a spokesperson, hire a somebody, you know, hire somebody who does it. But instead, they use that money to hire an agency, and the agency is very good, and they're smart people. But they're a bunch of 24-year-old non-technologists trying to speak to technologists, and some of their content is good, some of it is slick, some of it looks really nice, but I don't feel like anybody would point. I don't feel like any of their target audience would point to their output and go, "That was really meaningful to me." Oh my, I'll remember that one for a while. They do that because that's the playbook they've been taught. And I just think what one of the genius things that you have done, Stephen, is that you've given them another, you know, commercial option to say, "Oh, okay, here's the price list to go talk to 10 bloggers. I don't know how to do that by myself, but I can do that via Tech Field Day and Stephen." Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's giving them a different people who wouldn't know how to do it on their own, another option, making it more acceptable.
Yeah, and actually one of the coolest things too that I heard recently, one of the PR people who I love dearly and work with so much, said, you know what you do is you get people to answer my phone calls. They said nobody reads emails and nobody answers their phone anymore.
I feel like we've really established that the being part of the circle you're influencing, that's certainly a theme of the Geek Whisperers, and Tech Field Day is a great example of that. But let's talk about the content crunch itself. Is content marketing overhyped these days? Is it just something that we're thinking it's going to be the savior if we throw enough spaghetti at the wall? Or is there something more to it?
Do we need to define content marketing?
I'm sure we do.
I'm just a caveman. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's a buzzword that has come up over the last year or two. And I don't know who invented it or why it is. It means creating content people like, which you'd think doesn't need to be a buzzword, right? You would think that that's just what one does. But somehow, Google content marketing and dip into the first page, it's horrifying, right? It's 10 tips on how to make your content marketing strategy. Ways to make content that is clickable.
Don't do this, 5 kittens will die.
And I think it's connected to all the Upworthy, BuzzFeedy kind of.
Yeah.
It's like
your favorite.
It's connected to that and native advertising. People are finally realizing they got to make something that people want to click on, and all they can do is think of pictures of kittens.
And I'm going to push back a little bit. Again, hearkening to my web development past, I think content marketing has been around for a long time. But when it left the web and went mobile, in some ways, we became more and more distributed, not just across platforms, but across devices, does it live natively? Where, it got even more complex and more confusing, and people wanted to chase it further and faster. Because there is something about content marketing. Initially, I think content marketing was around, driving people to a particular, often to a white paper or a centralized. It was driving the herd into a single place, a single watering hole. And when somebody stepped in the watering hole and it got distributed everywhere, how do you drive people? So that, I think, is one of the issues with content marketing. When you get them to the content, you want to demand generate. That is when the D to the G happens. And so I think that's been going on a long time. I think we've gotten more and more focused on it, and the hype has gone up with the prevalence of more content, more types of content, and the fewer larger pools. The more distributed it becomes, the higher a traditional marketer's blood pressure goes.
Thank goodness there's a content marketing institute online that can tell me what content marketing is. And their definition...
Oh, you're clicking around now, aren't you?
Google saves us.
I feel terrible, but I'm reading something with quotations, so it must be authoritative.
Okay, the listeners are clicking around, too.
Yeah, I pity them. Because this one says that content marketing is a marketing technique of creating and distributing relevant and valuable content to attract, acquire, and engage a clearly defined and understood target audience with the objective of driving profitable customer action.
That is such a tautology. Did you just read that? It says content marketing is content marketing. That's all it says.
Content marketing is something that attracts an audience and brings them to a profitable
blah, 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 marketing, blah, blah, blah,
so
content.
Pretty much it's all kinds of marketing from the beginning of time.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Good content marketing is content that attracts people. So that's really helpful advice, too.
Yes, because you'll know whether your content is good when it attracts people.
I'm sorry, Content Marketing Institute. I'm going to rip you a new one. I don't even know you people. Once somebody decides that they have to put a label.
That's CMI to you, sir.
Thank you. So once some idiot decides they need to put a label on something that we all know what it is and we all totally agree with it, then, you know, so that they need to like clutch it and label it and package it up and say, oh, this isn't just creating stuff people like so they'll like it. This is content marketing, you know.
I'm gonna push back again because I am one of those idiots. Because we ironically talked about it just recently. One of the things we found in terms of a tactic that's useful internally is to give anything a label. Give your marketing program a label, you're more likely to get funded. Give your influencer program a name, you're more likely to get respect. So names and words have power. And what you're describing in some ways is very basic branding. So I think there is great power in sort of coming to a conclusion about what something is and talking about it. I think where it becomes dangerous, as in many things, is when it's everything. And we were talking about this recently too, Stephen, that things become inherently grotesque. I'll let you make your literary reference to that, but things, the more they expand, mm-hmm. the more grotesque they can become. And maybe as we get back to this concept of content shock, that as this expands, as again, and I was very precise in saying before, I think some of what we see is this infinite expansion of content marketing because the centers have shifted. The people are more distributed. The content is easier to produce. And that causes this massive expansion that can cause destruction, sort of a la a black hole.
Well, it used to be the aggregators were the media, you know, the storage. I forget which one did you write for, Stephen?
A storage magazine.
Storage magazine.
Very cleverly named.
For years, all these companies, they tried to get their stuff into an aggregator, a filter, which was Storage Magazine. And then for the last 10 years, we've said, oh, we're just all going to publish it ourselves. And now now we've got this content crunch. I mean, am I oversimplifying it, Amy? Amy, are you driving towards a thesis? I'm not quite sure.
I don't know that I am, but I'm sure I'll find out if we get there. I think you are hitting that nail on the head. We are looking for, we're trying to re-aggregate. Again, I have this chemist brain, I suppose. And I'm thinking about, you know, we've split the molecules, and we've got the energy out of it, but it's almost frenetic at this point. And we're trying to figure out how to put this back together. So I think as humans, we enjoy the grouping. We need a label because it's something we can understand and manage and absorb. And so right now everything is pretty fragmented. So I think it's unsettling in some ways for consumers as it is for marketers because they don't know how to relate to one another because consumers still want to consume and marketers still want them to consume. And how do we get back in accord? And I think a way, and again, taking it back to our at hand example, that when Stephen he brings a herd of unicorns. I'm going to use all the analogies.
Oh, here she goes with unicorns.
It's unicorns as a service. He's got a stable. But at the same time, he is doing the farming and the hunting so that when someone comes to market, it's a safe place to be. In the same way that every marketer doesn't want to go hunt, farm, etc., they are comfortable going to the shop and getting unicorns as a service. So Stephen has provided them something that is new and it feels foreign to them, but it's packaged in a way that they can understand and take back to their teams and have them understand. So it's got results behind it now because it's built on itself and it's re-aggregated what had been distributed. So therefore, people being the layer to sort of bring all the content back together. And then Stephen's aggregated the people.
But John, I've got a conclusion for you, or a thesis at least, and I'd love your opinion on it. I think this content marketing revolution, if I can use that with some big heavy air quotes, this content marketing move is really a strategy for professional marketers to rebrand how to market to people for other marketers, and has become a movement that's really just trying to leverage the fact that content is not in their control anymore. And they know it. So it's supposed to be this like acknowledgement of their lack of control. And they're trying to use that as a new way to regain control.
Use
that. Oh, we understand that, you know, you're looking for content, Mr. Tech Person, from other tech people. And we know that because of the principles of content marketing.
Traditional marketing people, they need a recipe, and they're more comfortable with a recipe, especially if they're not doing this on the front lines like us. I don't know, Amy. In some ways, though, part of the problem might be you've got your diagram that you draw with the people, platforms, and content. And
you went there. I went there.
Yeah. We'll go there for a sec. And is part of the shtick here that the content crisis, one of the things we keep talking about, this content crunch, it was another blog post by Mark Schaefer, who writes a fairly nice social media blog, fairly insightful, just talking about how the problem, right, just too much content and how much money and time are we spending shooting content out into the universe, the cold universe that doesn't care. But is part of the problem that we have a whole social media industry now that's really built on maybe they focus too much on the platform, so we use the word content marketing to remind us that actually people want to read what we do?
I absolutely agree with that. I'm noticing a trend, and again, it's people go where they're comfortable. And if you think of those three circles of, and I use those three circles to define kind of what social media is, to break it back down for people so it isn't such a foreign concept. And I think those three things comprise much of social media when people talk about I do social media, or it's an agency who provides social media services. And if you see where they are in their comfort zone, 9 out of 10 of them are going to be very comfortable in platform. So they're going to talk about how many more likes they can get you, how many more followers they can drive. They're going to be pretty metrics heavy, and they're going to be very, very versed in platform mythology. So what's going to drive SEO, how to get more engagement, what makes things perform. And again, these are any professional in social media has to have some fluency with, or at least conversational ability with platforms. But to overemphasize them, I think, takes away from both the quality of the content and the fact that good content will find its right platform. So if you sort of focus on the content and like we've talked about, make heroes of the brave, really lift up the people who are the content creators, bring the experts forward. The platforms can become back in balance. So if you want balance in the force, you have to have all three elements. And when you overemphasize one of those three circles, I think that's where things become disrupted. And again, back to Stephen. Stephen has a pretty high focus on the content aspect and the people creating that content, which makes what he does very different. And again, coming from within instead of an outside agency, kind of, I'm an expert on the structure, but not, you know, the thing inside. I'm an expert on the container, but not the contents.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that the you know, if we take that model to heart, I mean, essentially, my problem, and this is what Amy was getting at earlier, is you know, my reference that she was referring to was Sherwood Anderson in Winesburg, Ohio. Essentially, people glom onto stuff, and it screws them up. You know, even a good thing. You know, I want to be a good person. I want to be a doctor who heals people. You know, doctors tend to become caricatures of doctors. Techies tend to become caricatures of techies, and marketers tend to become caricatures of marketers. I mean, you know, it's like in the Matrix, right? Humanity is a virus. You know, we glom onto something and we get so focused on what this thing is. Oh, this works. Let me do that 5,000 times. That must work 5,000 times better.
Yeah. Well, and when we forget, try to become things like that, we end up overemphasizing something that's not really what we're after.
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, if we bring that home to content or to this whole social media thing, people figured out that if you focused on the platforms and gamed the platforms, you could get fantastic numbers. And that fantastic numbers were great because they're fantastic, right? And so, and their numbers, not only are they fantastic, but their numbers. So let's do that a lot. And so the, you know, Google has spent, you know, what, 10 years fighting, you know, the, I mean, SEO, right? I mean, SEO on the one hand is white hat. And on the other hand, it's definitely black hat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at it and essentially it's really easy to make that crossover from white to black hat because, you know, either you're optimizing or you're gaming and, yeah. And which is it? And, and
SEO
people get so focused on numbers. Oh, I need better numbers that they forget that it's supposed to be about the other things. It's supposed to be about content and people.
Would you say that SEO leads to metrics obsession, which leads to the dark side?
Fear leads to anger. Yes, absolutely. It leads to the dark side.
Yeah, I've got some SEO people talking to me now. There's a few product pages on our site that don't score for particular terms like they want them to, and they want me to they want to have a meeting with me to insert links in our blog posts that point back to our product pages, and we're just going to have a because I you know the blogs are like Uncle John's organic egg farm, right? I have a brand there. And you know, you're sure they're all written by VMware people, but you know, I can't make them too like I'll do it if it's you know, I'll do it if it helps, but not if it makes the blogs look weird and spammy, right? Or if it's natural, if it's a word we're already using, you know, if they want me to every time we a couple times when we say vSphere, if they want me to link to the vSphere page, I'll do that, but it's a slippery slope, man.
Well, you just have to keep real with it. I mean, that's the thing. We all just have to take a step back. We have to take our hands off the keyboard and take a step back and say, wait a second, what are we really doing here? Am I just playing a game, or am I contributing some valuable content and building meaningful relationships with people? You know, it's like, you know, am I just trying to get more Facebook likes because they're Facebook likes, or am I actually trying to find people on Facebook who like me?
But Stephen, I've got to push back your at least play devil's advocate. Like there are moments that you've already said where you deliver the metrics people want as part of a service that they're paying you for. So
I'm a hypocrite, baby. I'm totally
okay.
A hypocrite.
Just
I'm right
as
there
long
with
as
that.
We're all adopting our hypocritical nature, then game on. Yep. No, I don't mean to call you out in some way. Like I think there's also just a necessity to play within the rules of the game in front of you and show that you can play.
You're totally right. I mean, basically, if the Tech Field Day budget comes from the social media metrics thing, then I better give them the metrics that they paid for. But I'm hoping that that's a Trojan horse and that what they actually get is meaningful relationships and meaningful conversations. Because if they don't, if they just get the metrics, then it was a waste of time.
Yeah. And in the same way that
they don't even get the metrics, then it's definitely a waste of time.
Yeah, definitely. But, and then there are times where we're asked in our roles to produce content and we're just like, we all have these moments of angst just saying we don't need more crappy content, but it actually, I'm going to say something that might not be popular with us and say that I think the push to keep producing content actually inspires us to make it not crappy at some point and produce more good content that ends up starting our cycle all over again. So maybe we're part of a system that actually really is pretty good for us as opposed to crappy, cyclical, bad content.
Well, I'm going to jump in here too with a little story I actually just thought about today. In my life before I was in publishing or technology, I had a service job. And people have heard me talk about this before, but I'm a big fan of everybody who enters public life having had a customer service job at some point in their life because it teaches you a lot about dealing with people. And in this job, I had to make sandwiches. And I was making a sandwich, and it was really, I got caught up in the aesthetics of the sandwich, which will sound funny.
I was a sandwich artist.
Yes, I was a sandwich. I was in a coffee shop making this sandwich, and it was a homemade mustard. I remember so distinctly. So it had whole grain mustard seeds in it. It was really pretty.
You ground
and
with so, your own palm.
Yes, exactly. But I became too interested in the aesthetics of the sandwich because, you know, you spread it on, it was even, it was lovely. I put the sandwich together, I hand it out to the customer, and to his credit, he brings it back and he's like, you know, this mustard is really good. I like that you guys make your own mustard, but it's got a lot of bite. It's pretty spicy. And, you know, could I have, can you redo the sandwich and have less mustard on it? Which sounds funny, but I've never forgotten that, because I think in many things, when we talk about becoming grotesque, again, you become so enamored of the form that you forget what you yourself would want. I wouldn't have made that sandwich for myself, yet I was making it and giving it out to somebody else. And I think content marketers, I send a blanket scold out and include myself. If you don't do an audit on yourself, if you don't consume your own content, why on earth do you think anybody else wants to?
Ooh,
I don't even know how to.
Absolutely, which means you have to be kind of part of your audience. You have to at least identify with your audience or look at it with their eyes. My story was when I was serving up Uncle Bob's homemade ice cream at the Illinois State Fair, I was giving people the biggest scoop I could give them. And Uncle Bob looked at me and said, John, you just gave them a double portion, a double scoop and a cone. And they started, and they can't eat that because the ice cream was homemade and it would start to drip immediately and it would fall on the ground. And so by, I guess the same point, right? I was making them a John Troyer sized ice cream serving that I wanted, but it turns out they couldn't even eat it. It was too big. There you go.
Wow.
We're either like preachers or professors tonight. I'm not sure which.
I think that's exactly it. When we've done various kinds of training and people are like, oh, how can I get more followers? And I always say, have you ever followed your own Twitter stream? Look at your last 20 tweets. Would you follow you?
I look at my Twitter's last 20 tweets all the time. I never realized that.
I do the same. And this is that sort of auditing process. And you don't want to become
that word, narcissist.
Well, I don't think you want to become so self-conscious, but I come from editorial training. And again, as we talk, if we talk about ways to offset content shock and a way to bring all this back into balance, leave some things on the cutting room floor.
Less content, better content.
That's right, people. Blog less, baby.
Well, and you know, we'll all fall down. But I like the idea, too. Another solution, as we've talked about, is the people factor. People aggregate content they like, and good content swells up. So I really appreciate this, that citizen analyst layer that I think we all participate in. Because it helps weed out. I don't have time to weed out all the content, but I can hack at it. It's like CAPTCHA. I can type a few keystrokes in and help discern what all this, you know, scanned in document that they have yet to determine what it actually is. We can all help kind of hack at that, right? A few keystrokes at a time.
There are people who aggregate and everybody's contributing. So yeah. So Stephen, let's come full circle. Maybe this content, there's too much content. The solution is people, much like Soylent Green and social media and everything else. People who are filters. Are people the right filters, though, Stephen? I mean, if I go to a VMUG and I ask people who's on Twitter, 10 or 20% of the people raise their hands. So for again, in our ecosystem, we're part of it. We're definitely part of the value chain. And maybe the people that are on Twitter get the filtered content and then share it with their colleagues who are off Twitter. I don't know. How do you feel? I mean, who are the filters, modern day filters, if you're talking to giving an IT marketer some advice?
Yeah. Well, let me just, that's actually one of those things that I like to, I do talk about a lot. Probably 90% of the people that I deal with have a shortcut term for whatever it is that you're talking about, these filters. I sometimes call them influencers, even though that's the most pretentious and obnoxious name I could possibly imagine.
It's all we got.
The shortcut name that a lot of people apply is bloggers, which I think is probably not a good name, because essentially you're right. And I get this too. You know, I do seminars all over the country talking about storage and virtualization. And I ask people, you know, who's on Twitter? And usually there's one or two people in the room. Who's on, you know, who reads, you know, who's read my blog? One or two people in the room. One of the questions that I love, because it keeps me honest and humble, is, you know, who here has ever heard of Stephen before? And these are people who came to a seminar by me to listen to me speak all day, and the number has never been over 20%. And wow, that really is a reality check. And that's why I say these people are not bloggers and they're not tweeters. There's got to be way more than that. There's got to be 1,000 angles, 1,000 different, you know, avenues. I get more social media engagement through LinkedIn updates than I do through Facebook, for example. You know, LinkedIn is one of those things that a lot of people in tech and professionals out there use, even if they don't follow Twitter and even if they don't read a blog. You know, I mean, remember, most people don't read blogs. You know, most people just stumble upon stuff through Google, through organic searches and things like that. And so, you know, you have to have a big picture. You have to have a big tent. It's not I'm a blogger or I tweet a lot, therefore I'm important. It's I have 100 different stages. You know, filtering content means going to the VMUG and repeating the best practices that somebody wrote about last week and to a whole room full of people. That's way more effective than a blog post. It's way harder to measure than the number of tweets or the number of hits on your blog or something, but it's way more effective. There's a lot of ways that people can be influencers and amplifiers, and it's not just social media metrics.
I agree, and I actually we're going right around full circle of the importance of words, because if we talk about taking this message outside of a small, you know, circle of believers, then you have to call it something, you know, you gotta call it super crispy Fruityos. You gotta give it that name that sells the cereal. And I think influencers works. Again, we've had some success with citizen analysts because we had the citizen journalist movement that people became comfortable with. And I think they kind of, that resonates a little bit. There's still something about the term bloggers that makes people think they're wearing their underwear and typing away in their basement.
Yep.
Should I put on pants and go upstairs? Sorry.
So what else, everyone?
And I would ask Stephen, sort of, I always like trending. Where do you see this going? Where is the center? Where do we reach equilibrium and then where do we disrupt again?
Really, you weren't going to give me any kind of heads up about that. You're just going to ask that question and expect an answer. Right.
Boom.
Now.
Drop the Yeti. Yeah.
Boom. What is the meaning of life? If I had the answer, would I be right here? No, I don't know.
I like the way you started off by by being all shucks, but two, by just saying, look, I do this thing. You write some white papers, you do some speeches, you hook the people up with the tech field day. And it seems to work. I don't know that I like the way that you were said, you don't know that that's the ultimate answer to marketing nirvana, but it seems to work for now.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's maybe that is the answer. Maybe the answer is, you know, I have no idea, but this seems to work right now. And I'm going to try to keep it real and I'm going to try to avoid becoming a grotesque and going off the deep end and thinking I'm something special. And I'm going to focus on, you know, people, and I'm going to focus on content, and I'm not going to worry so much about the platforms because I'm swimming in the platforms every day. I'm going to focus on primarily on people because I think that no matter what, it's all going to come back to human beings talking to each other, whether they're talking to each other on Facebook or on Pinterest or on, you know, whatever else, they're just talking to each other. And if you just focus on that, if you focus on building relationships and having conversations, wherever it may happen, I think that that's going to lead to the right outcome. Boom. I dropped the mic, baby.
I think you did.
It's a resounding place to just leave it. I think we've gone many places tonight, all of them intellectually stimulating and all of them pointing in the same direction. You know, talk about what you care about with people that care about it. And that seems to be a recipe for success these days.
I do want to say one more thing, which I think we did interesting to me in this episode is we came to some conclusions. I think we're all kind of in alignment, but we all have different routes. We're all kind of struggling with it to get there, which I think is important because we all do a similar type of marketing and yet we're all still struggling with that. I think that speaks to the newness of this craft that we're in. And I really do want to hear back from listeners, because I know, Stephen, you've got a lot of people that read your blog and sort of think about this. As we have wrestled with it, I would really like to hear back from our listeners about what they think about these concepts, what they're seeing, and how it's affecting their jobs. I'm really curious.
And Stephen, so with that, where are the best couple places that people can find you on the internet?
Well, you know, I think that I just heard Amy call me a blogger, so I guess you're going to have to look at my blog, which is blog.foskets.net. Honestly, if you just Google Stephen Foskett, I'm pretty findable. But otherwise, I'm at S Foskett on Twitter. You know, I'm S Foskett on LinkedIn. I'm S Foskett on Google+. I'm pretty much S Foskett everywhere. So, and I would love to talk to people. You know, it really is all about the people, and hopefully, I can hear back from somebody that totally disagrees with me, and that would be awesome, because then I would maybe learn something from them.
Good. Well, we certainly learned something tonight, and we hope our listeners do too. So definitely comment on us on our blog and write back to us on Twitter, without a doubt. Thank you so much, Stephen, and thank you, fellow Whisperers. Have a good one.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Who, me? You're going to have to cut this, because I was totally scratching my ear and I didn't hear a word you said. Hang on, I got an itchy ear. There we go.
The Yeti right. is actually a great Q-tip as well.
Oh my God.
What kind of ears do you have?
Yeti ears.
It just itched. It itched. That's all. I got an itch. You know, no. You got an itch. You got to scratch it.
Ready? Okay, let's start over.